You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. It's President's Day in the United States, and it's quite ironic, isn't it? The President's Day should come at the time when two presidents are sort of juxtaposing at the moment. You've got the one who is, you know, he's not the most dynamic person in the world, but he's created a dynamic team around him, and he's going to try and heal America. And the other one, the former president, is trying to continue to divide the nation. So I worry a little bit about the political environment in America. And as a New Yorker, as I consider you to be, what do you make of it?
It's very interesting, I think, because there are quite a few aspects that came out of the hearing, or you know, of the case, and what was surprising was that that quite a few Republicans went across and voted against Trump.
Seven of them.
Of course, that's a lot more than we've seen in the past. You know, over the last 4 years, it might have been one person that might have crossed the line or the divide, but seven is quite a lot. And I also think what Mitch McConnell said after Trump got off the case, you know, after the impeachment case went in his favor. Listen, the majority voted for impeachment. It's just that he didn't get the two-thirds majority. Yes. But he did open the way, and I think he was quite scathing in saying, look, there are other areas. You know, there could be civil litigation or criminal litigation as well against Trump for what he did. And he was obviously furious, I mean, at what was revealed in the case and what did happen on January the 6th. So it's going to be a situation now where the diehards are still behind him. They still, you know, the Republican Party still has a big support base that is backing Trump. But it's where it goes to now, you know, whether or not there is going to be a moderate force that comes in, or whether Trump can kind of, you know, regather his troops and pick up where he left off. I don't think so. I think he's spent. I think, honestly, Lindsay, when you saw those videos and when you, you know, you went through the whole case, I mean, for a president of the United States to act that way in what is a sacred place, you know, Washington, I've spoken to you about this before.
Yes.
It's a kind of city which really embodies the Constitution of the United States, you know, what the founding fathers put together, and we can go on and wax lyrical about that for some time. But I mean, for people in the U.S., they are immensely proud of what America stands for. And for Trump to have done this, I think stuck in the hearts of a lot of Americans. So my view is this will pass. He'll try and get it together again, you know, like Napoleon tried to come back, was defeated eventually at Waterloo. But I mean, you know, it's that kind of comeback. I don't think he'll be even partly as successful as, you know, as Napoleon was. So I think America's got to regroup. And just look how peaceful it is at the moment, you know, without Trump going on. We're just getting on with it. We're getting on top of the pandemic. A million people a day now in the U.S. The mess that he left, you know, trying to clean it up. I see even in Britain things are getting on. So overall, the world seems to be just in a slightly more peaceful position than it was when Trump was there. Whether it's clean air, whatever it is. Even I see Draghi now just being sworn in as the Italian Prime Minister, hopefully to try and get that country on the road as well. So I don't know. I don't know how you see it. I just want to see the end of him, and I just hope that there are enough Americans, you know, just to act sensibly in the years to come.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell. He's a coward because on the one hand he said that Donald Trump is liable. On the other hand, he voted not guilty, which I think is such a fudge. It's such offensive. It's such a cowardly thing to do because he wants to keep his job. But I don't think that Trump, should he ever be involved in politics again, which he will be, of course, because he's already indicated that he will be, he won't have Mitch McConnell as part of his team. I mean, for example, Mitch McConnell said the following: President Trump is still liable for everything he did while he's in office. He didn't get away with anything yet. He said that. But how can he vote not guilty at the same time as saying that? It's pathetic.
I can't answer that. For what he said afterwards, it's rather strange. Whether he believed that it was unconstitutional, you know, which is what the lawyers were put up to say, to fight, that they couldn't really, I don't know. There are a lot of arguments, but I just hope we, you know, that the Republicans and Democrats can just move on from here and just repair the damage that was done over the 4 years, and that we don't have to repeat another president like that, or have a repeat with another president like that, you know, just where every day was, you never knew what was going to happen every day. It was just all over the place, and it's just such a pleasure not to get, not to get him upsetting markets, the world on a day-to-day basis. I just think he was an awful man.
Well, he is an awful man, and will continue to be an awful man. Maybe we'll look back and reflect on the havoc that he's wreaked on the American economy and also the world's consciousness.
But there has to be some further cases against it. I mean, when you saw those
civil cases, I would imagine.
Whatever against. I think as it comes out, each one of those attackers, you know, gets into court. I think more and more is going to come out around this. I don't think it's, you know, they still have to be tried. They've been arrested and the cases are being prepared against them. So I think this is going to go on for some time. And I think it's going to be a blight on the Republican Party, and certainly on the president and on the people that were around him as well. So, we'll see how this unfolds. But I just want to get on and get over the pandemic and see that the vaccines are distributed and we get back to some kind of normal life again.
The all-share index of the JSE, as I look at my screen, which is slightly delayed, is up 1.2% to nearly 67,000, David Shapiro, all-time record highs. You must be jumping through hoops at the moment.
It's
fantastic.
It's quite remarkable, but I think the big driver at the moment, and the one that we didn't expect to be as vibrant as it is at the moment is the resource index. And this is becoming a big talking subject.
Yes.
BHP's results, I think, are out this week. The expectation is very high. Remember that the iron ore price, I think, is about 160, 165, mainly on China shortages. There's a whole lot of stories why the iron ore price is up. And BHP produced the stuff at about $13, $14. So massive margins, very big, big stories going to come through on that side of it. But I think the other side of it, and we were talking about Trump, is really this push towards clean air and battery power and green tech and all the other techs that we're talking about. So suddenly you've got other metals, from platinum, rhodium, and the rare earth metals that I can't pronounce. They're also iniums, you know, they all end up in very funny names and that. Mm-hmm. But all of these are going through the roof as well, and bringing a lot of attention to the commodity markets. And if you read on the weekend, you know, there was just so many articles about the oil price. Admittedly, the oil price can come down if Saudi Arabia, OPEC, start opening up production again. But I mean, in the meantime, this is where the energy is coming. And I see the resource index up close to 3.5-4%, whereas the all share up about 1.25%. So you can see where the energy coming, and platinum shares 5%. So that's it. That's it. You know, we're into a commodity boom, Lindsay, and you know the dangers of a commodity boom.
Of course, they're cyclical, but also they can be managed, because I think there's a new, a responsible set of directors on the boards of gold miners and platinum miners, or rather PGM miners, and they say to themselves, we're not going to make the mistakes of the past. I really believe that. I really believe that they're going to conserve their money, they're going to be responsible with their dividends, they're going to be responsible with their expansion plans, because in the old days, the CEO would say, gosh, we've made so much money, let's go and buy that company, let's go and buy that company, etc., and then the cycle turns. This time, I know it's a horrible phrase, this time I think it's different, certainly in South Africa. That's my view.
I think the CEOs are much more responsible, having learnt the consequences of the Chinese super cycle. In other words, believing that it was going to go on for another decade or so. And analysts believed in that. I still remember the stories from 2 decades ago almost about how much China would be spending and how long this would go up. And we were discussing the other night when platinum was at 2,300 and iron ore at similar places. You know, copper, I think, is only at an 8-year high. I think it's been higher in its lifetime. So I think they've learned some bitter lessons, and having expanded, trying to secure production, laying out huge amounts of money and getting caught on the wrong side, it's taken a long time and many years to get their balance sheets in shape. So yeah, you're right on that. I just hope they don't fall for it as things start to pick up, because it's so tempting. You know, we've seen it before. It's so tempting to go and look for, look for deals when you've got making these huge amounts of cash that are building up on the balance sheet. You want to go and do something with it, but you've got to be careful. I think I would love to see more organic kind of growth than just going for acquisitions and paying over the top, which has been, what we've seen. Just look at Anglos. I mean, if you go into the history of this Anglo-American, Kutafani had to come in and really tailor it down after its, you know, predecessors. Remember, they bought back shares and went on wild buying sprees. Not only them, but I think virtually everyone. So yeah, but it's lifting the JSE. I think the other side of the JSE is languishing a bit. It's battling. We've seen the recovery, but I think it's starting to kind of run out of steam as the emerging market theme kind of plays out. The Rand has also taken a bit of an edge off that. You know, the Rand is reflecting the money that's flowing into commodities and also our bonds. You know, so it's a remarkable story. How do you explain that?
I don't know. Have you ever heard of anything? Have you ever heard of anything called indium?
Yes. Yeah. Is it one of the rare metals?
It is.
What do you call it?
Rare metals. Or hafnium, or germanium.
I don't know.
Or gallium.
I don't know what.
Or uranium oxide. Or neodymium.
That's the one, yeah.
Or rhenium.
Or
terbium. They're all at record highs. I don't know what they are. They're just byproducts of the platinum group metals, I think, and also the people that mine these rare metals. It's extraordinary. Yeah. I've never heard of it.
I don't know where that they use.
Where does it come from?
I don't know.
Dysprosium.
I used to love to get, as a kid, Anglo-American used to put out a magazine. I can't remember what it was called. It started with an O. But they used to always cover different kind of metals. And they were always the most beautiful pictures of what they brought up from under the ground. I just loved gold. You know, I loved to watch them pouring gold. I would often go, on these trips down gold mines, or on Sundays we used to watch the dancers and also watch them pour gold and so on.
Yeah.
So it was always at the Rand show that they used to have around Easter. It was always one of the draw cards.
Where was the Rand show? It was in the south, wasn't it? South of Joburg.
No, it is now south, but it used to be where the university is. It's now, the grounds have been taken over by the University of Witwatersrand there. So I think that was the Western
Rand
campus.
Easter show. It used to be called the Rand Easter show.
That's
that was
right.
It. Yeah, I used to go to that.
Yeah. But pouring gold was always one of the highlights, yeah. Mm. And then we'd have to go through all the, we'd go with our parents and they would go and look at all the stores and whatever they were looking for. We just couldn't wait to get to the amusement park. Mm. For the figure eight and the whip and all of those things. And we had to suffer the Czechoslovakian hall or something and look at heavy machinery or something. So what are we doing here? Let's get to the playground.
David, the playground of the international economy is characterized at the moment by the Japanese economy, because the Japanese economy grew sharply in the fourth quarter of 2020, and that was the figure that came out this morning. But it only fell by 4.8% in 2020, whereas the UK economy fell by 9.9%.
Yeah.
Okay, the Japanese economy is a great exporter, and suddenly people start to buy stuff from Japan, whether it's a yen story or whatever it is, or just the pent-up demand for their goods. I don't know. But different economies are doing different things, like different countries are doing different things when it comes to the global health crisis.
The Japanese market is back where it was in 1990, which were the heady days. But I've never warmed to it because I've never got a grip on Japanese companies. It's always been highly volatile all over the place. And as much as I've tried to learn about it and find companies, yes, there's some very innovative companies, whether they're robotic companies or, you know, mainly technology companies, but never really making big profits or doing well. You know, then it comes down to a handful of the motor companies that we end up in, or Sony or some of the other gaming companies, you know, so which have done well, Nintendo and so on. But I've never really got a grip on Japanese markets. You know, never. I can't explain. I'm not saying that they haven't been successful, but I've never been able to get a feel for them. And you know, and also you've got the currency, which has always been volatile against the dollar. So
what you're saying is that you're like America. You're US. Yeah. You're America centric. Let's face it. Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Europe. I like Europe, and you know, I watch those stocks. Oh no, and I like China. Oh no, I've got and certain the Chinese companies. Sure. But Japan, I don't know. I just can't get – you know, we know China. China has got 1.3 billion people who are coming – I don't want to say out of poverty, who are increasing their incomes every year and spending.
They're going from rural to urban.
Yep.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And I just looked at L'Oreal's results over the weekend, L'Oreal, the beauty care company.
Do you use face creams from L'Oreal?
No, I use E45, which is the lowest of the low. It's just a cream. It's just you buy it. It's one below Nivea.
That's pretty low.
It is. My face is quite sensitive to cream. So
you've got a lovely face. You know what I've got?
So the dermatologist just said, use this junk. He says, it's fine. It is the same. The same thing.
If I go upstairs now to my bathroom, I've got one of those. The only reason I use it is because it's such a beautiful piece of packaging. It's a round tin. And it's blue, and it's got Nivea written across it. And it's the original Nivea, and it's so simple and so beautiful. I have to buy it, even though I don't know what it does to me. But anyway, I stick it on my face every morning, and hopefully it does something. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. The expense is in the packaging. But coming back to it, what's happened is that you'll see the power of China. Mm. Online demand for skincare products. And makeup and things like that. And this is so when you've got 1.3 billion people, you know, you can see the growth. Japan is X growth in as far as you know, population growth is sliding. It's an older population. It's still a very powerful economy, but the growth side of it, I think, is, you know, we've seen the best now. So now it's a matter of the companies, the innovative companies, and you know, how they feed into the global economy. So, you know, Japan is a consumer nation. I don't think is that exciting.
Go there, and it's a very exciting place. So there was a 7.1 earthquake.
On the Richter scale.
On the Richter scale, yeah. And the whole place, but they're ready for it. And the whole the building's shaped, but everybody's fine. Mm. So go to Japan. It's very, very exciting. ShopRite, what do you make of that? They came out with their operational update. It wasn't bad. The ShopRite hasn't done much, but it hasn't plunged 10%. It hasn't gone up 10%. Nah. So that means that it's doing quite well, I think.
It's doing okay. I would have thought, you know, where we got the other results coming out previously, markets responded. This one didn't, you know. That's why I think we might have run a little bit of a course, you know, in that the low values that we saw last year have bounced, and we've seen a very nice bounce in our market, particularly in small and medium caps. But now you've got to come out with the goods, you know, you've got to start making some decent profits. And I don't know whether the economy really supports it at these levels. But if the rest of the market goes up, I think it's going to have an automatic uplifting effect on, you know, on the rest of the market. But at the moment, everything's coming from the mining side of it. And I think, you know, I don't think these go away. You know, it doesn't go away. This can be with us for a few months, this resource market. So I hope we can take advantage of it. And I hope that Ramaphosa, President Ramaphosa, and people around him are open enough to say, okay, listen, we're going into a recovery in the global economy. Let's introduce reforms. Let's bring a little bit of capital in here and help give this economy a bit of a shot in the arm. And not the vaccine, but just a bit of a boost. And we need it.
And you'll get it. Don't worry about that. Let's talk about football now. Because Arsenal won, they were 4-0 up after the first 5 minutes of the second half yesterday against Leeds. Then they let it slip a little bit, and I thought Leeds could have actually brought it back to 4-4, and because that's what Leeds United do, because they're so expansive in their football.
Now that's what Arsenal do. What Arsenal do.
Yeah. But it was like going to, on a Sunday morning, you go to Hackney Marshes.
We've seen that.
Yeah. You go to Hackney Marshes. Hackney Marshes in London is a place where there's about 120 football pitches, and these local teams go and kick the out of the each other, and they have loads of fun, and then they go for a beer afterwards. Leeds United are just like that. They just go out there and they run and they chase and they have loads of fun. And although they're not going to win the league, they'll probably finish mid-table or just below mid-table. But they scare other teams like Arsenal. And done Arsenal yesterday, 4-2. Well done.
Leo, you know, that's where Arsenal are frail. They're still frail at the back. And they can let those kind of goals in. I thought Leeds' goals were excellent. I thought they were very good. They were unstoppable against any club. You know, it doesn't matter if they were 4-0 up. They were very good. But I think the highlight of the weekend was just to watch where Liverpool's going. They just crack. And I think without Van Dijk and without Gomez, you know, who were the support of Liverpool's campaign last year, without them there, they're just not the same team.
But Manchester City look unstoppable. They've won 16 games in a row, which is an all-time record. They've won 16 games in a row in all competitions. They look unbelievable, and that's without Sergio Aguero. Aren't they fantastic? Don't they look good?
They're just clinical. Yeah. Just so clinical, yeah. They play Arsenal on Sunday.
And it's all because of Pep Guardiola. It's all because of Pep Guardiola. No, he's a genius. He wobbles a little bit, and he's a Catalan and everything else. But I predict that he will, at the end of this season or the end of next season, he will go back to Barcelona. He'll take over from Ronald Koeman, and he will be back there because he's a Catalan at heart. And Barcelona will rise again from the ashes of what they are at the moment, although they're second in the league. Yeah, that's what I think. But it's a beautiful thing to see because there's engineering and art at the same time when you watch Manchester City, I think.
Very clinical. And hold on to the ball. They're never scared to stay on the ball. They know exactly where they are. And they're missing a couple of big players as well.
Of course they are.
Still. So they play Arsenal. I don't watch. I just hide under the bed.
You never know. David, thank you very much for your time. Okay. As always on a Monday. David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.